The International Criminal Court in The Hague is contemplating issuing arrest warrants against senior Israeli government and military officials as war criminals. Israel expects the leaders of the free world to stand firmly against the ICC outrageous assault on Israel's inherent right of self-defense. We expect them to use all the means at their disposal to stop this dangerous move.
My administration, with our second gentleman's leadership, has launched our nation's first national security strategy to counter anti-Semitism. That's mobilizing the full force of the federal government to protect Jewish community.
And we must, all of us, together, call out anti-Semitism in all of its forms without equivocation and without delay. This is our moment.
The U.S. House passed a bill, 320-91, and a group of representatives say they want to protect their Jewish constituents. And the bill would essentially make it easier for the Department of Education to enforce anti-discrimination laws at public institutions.
So this bill would require the Department of Education to use the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism. Many of the Republicans and Democrats said adding this type of regulation infringes on free speech.
Criminal behavior is criminal behavior. Violating people's civil rights is violating people's civil rights. But when we want to insert the government into what you're thinking and what motivates you, you are empowering that which should never be empowered. The ability of the government to police thought.
If implemented, the White House says they will, of the Department of Education, it puts a foreign multinational NGO of the UN out of Israel and Europe in control of the policy and says not only their current definitions, but when they change it, that will be law. So it's saying it's like a blank check veto to control legislation. It's like a new Congress over speech. And overall, the educational systems of primary school and secondary, it's staggering. So I've read the bill twice. So they get into the act and why they're doing it, the definition of it, and federal law, and then how they apply federal law is according to this new definition of anti-Semitism in Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They go on here to give power to this group, a foreign group, to then define and direct federal agencies in the Department of Education, FBI, against anyone that does what they say is anti-Semitic. And they give a big laundry list of the current definition. And they say they can also change it whenever they want. So it's an open check legislation, just like the CIA got in 47 to do whatever they want.
Said that this is one of the worst pieces of legislation we've ever seen. I wasn't exaggerating. Now, there's another example on the list that's gotten some attention, that it's anti-Semitic to claim that Jews killed Jesus. That's what the IHRA says. But that is not a claim invented by anti-Semites. That's in the gospel. According to every gospel account of Christ's passion, the Romans carried out the execution of Jesus at the insistence and behest of the Jewish authorities that handed him over to be killed and the mob that called for his death. It may be true that some actual anti-Semites, as in those who hate Jews, have used these biblical passages as a justification for their hatred. But that does not make the passages themselves false or evil or anti-Semitic. And it certainly doesn't give Congress the right to tell Christians that they cannot believe or repeat what is in those passages.
So get this, Joe, as in the United States of America. If you criticize Israel, the state police come to arrest you and your family.
And it goes on to explain the national security strategies of the president, the last two, which is anyone conservative or doesn't hate white people is anti-Semitic or a white supremacist who can be put in prison, basically.
Criticizing policies of government is equated with anti-Semitism. And that, I think, is a far right, comes from the far right. It comes from the authoritarian leanings where they don't want students on these campuses to voice their opinions because they want to change the narrative going forward.
Oh, you still got privacy. You know, Congress 2 weeks ago just passed a law again for total warrantless spying on all of us in live time by AI, and all the federal agencies are in everything with AI, just tracking everything in live time, and your car's got kill switches in it and geofencing controls, and they just killed 22 million people with poison shots. But we're going to sit here with the media focused on Israel and Palestine all day to have a big uproar and a big uprising.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal.
3, 2, 1.
We have a lot to discuss today. We're joined by Andrew Ridda in the 9 o'clock hour, opening up for your calls. In the last 3 hours, or the last hour of today's show. Sorry, I just got distracted. The crew was doing some rearranging, and I hadn't realized. I've got little symbols up for me now to look at the camera, reminding me that I am, in fact, doing a television show. Hopefully you can share this show at Infowars.com/show, band.video, take down the clips, re-upload them yourself, whatever you can do, we appreciate it. Let's just get right into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2024. Judge Cannon indefinitely postpones Jack Smith's classified documents trial after special counsel admits to evidence tampering. Judge Eileen Cannon on Tuesday afternoon indefinitely postponed Jack Smith's classified document trial against Trump. As previously reported, Judge Cannon on Monday night postponed a key deadline in the classified documents case after special counsel Jack Smith admitted to tampering with evidence. Cannon on Monday eventually temporarily stayed a May 9th deadline for President Trump and his co-defendant Walt Nalta and Carlos de Oliveira related to CIPA. On Tuesday afternoon, Judge Cannon set a second set of pretrial deadlines to manage pending discovery and disclosure matters. The judge vacated the May 20th, 2024 trial date. It may be several months until Judge Cannon sets a new trial date. Quote, the court also determines that the finalization of a trial date at this juncture before resolution of the myriad and interconnected pretrial and CIPA issues remaining and forthcoming would be imprudent and inconsistent with the court's duty to fully and fairly consider the various pretrial motions before the court. Critical CIPA issues and additional pretrial and trial preparations necessary to present this case to a jury. The court therefore vacates the current May 20th, 2024 trial date. Additionally, a June 21st hearing was set on Trump's motion to dismiss the indictment based on the unlawful appointment and funding of special counsel Jack Smith. Remember, Jack Smith is, he's just the hatchet man. He's just, they just said, go get Trump. And he's just in charge of all the Trump prosecutions, from the documents case to the election interference case in Georgia. It's all just Jack Smith. Just go get him. Go get him, boy. He's just the attack dog of the Biden administration, because that's what despotic regimes do. It's not really that complicated. And it's working, apparently. From Gateway Pundit, porn star loses it in court. Stormy Daniels starts yelling during questioning. Stormy Daniels lost it on Tuesday. The pressure was too much. The former stripper and porn star started yelling during questioning during the ongoing lawfare case against President Donald Trump. Stormy Daniels wrote in 2018, over the past few weeks, I've been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many, many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 2011, 2016, 2017, and now again in 2018. I am not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported overseas by overseas-owned tabloids. I'm denying this affair because it never happened. Judge Merchant agrees with Bragg and Biden's attorney, saying that Stormy Daniels has credibility to testify about an alleged affair, even though she repeatedly denied such affair over the years and even went on record by issuing an official statement denying such an affair. And this is what our government is doing. And this is what is dictating the future political landscape of America. A known liar porn star who happened to be the useful tool for the powers that be to go after their political opponent. It's embarrassing. Speaking of embarrassing, Biden puts arms shipments to Israel on hold amid dispute over Rafah attack. President Biden paused an arms shipment to Israel last week to prevent the U.S.-made weapons from being used in a long-threatened assault on the city of Rafah, administration officials said on Tuesday night, a sign of the growing rift between the United States and Israel over the conduct of the war. The president withheld 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 1,700 500-pound bombs that he feared could be dropped on Rafah, where more than 1 million Gazans have taken refuge, the officials said. The administration is reviewing whether to hold back future transfers, including guidance kit that converts so-called dumb bombs into precision-guided munitions. The decision to delay the delivery of the 3,500 bombs was the first time since the October 7th Hamas-led terrorist attack that Mr. Biden has used his power to curtail arms as an instrument to influence Israel's approach to the war that followed. A number of Mr. Biden's Democratic allies in Congress have for weeks urged him to limit or halt arms shipments to Israel, something he refused to do until now because of his strong support for the effort to destroy Hamas. So yes, they paused the weapon delivery. But don't worry, we've already delivered hundreds of billions of dollars in weapons to them. There's no shortage, and they are, in fact, using them to bomb Rafah at this moment. So for the first time in the 7 months since conflict began, Biden has made a tentative and moderate limitation to our unending support to the state of Israel. Not that it's going to have any effect. And we'll get back to that in just a little bit. From AP News, why the Boy Scouts of America is rebranding. After more than a century, Boy Scouts of America is rebranding as Scouting America, another major shakeup for an organization that once proudly resisted change. Founded 114 years ago, the Texas-based organization has recently been mired in turmoil over a flood of sexual abuse claims and bankruptcy. Now the organization is leaning into a more inclusive message as girls have been joining throughout its ranks. It sends this really strong message to everyone in America. They can come into this program. They can bring their authentic self. They can be who they are, and they will be welcomed here, said Roger Krone, who took over last fall as president and chief executive officer. The change was announced Tuesday at the Boy Scouts National Meeting in Florida, but won't take effect until February 2025. They are changing the name, of course, because the name puts a focus on inclusivity. Krone told the Associated Press they wanted a name going forward that made it clear that all children and teens are very, very welcome. But of course. I mean, what is there to say? It was a program exclusively for boys to do what boys do and go be boys in the woods and learn valuable skills and leadership talents. And of course, that's unacceptable. Now it was truly American. It was Christian. It was mostly white people, mostly boys. I mean, this doesn't exist anymore. This can't exist. This was a holdover of a time when American boys could be American boys. And that's over now. So now the American boys are little American girls. And the Boy Scouts is a haven for pedophiles. And that's the way that we like it. That's the way things have been going on purpose. Incredible. Incredible, all of these various manifestations of our soul being torn apart. Finally, we have this. AstraZeneca withdrawing COVID vaccine worldwide. The Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine is being withdrawn worldwide months after the pharmaceutical giant admitted for the first time in court documents that it can cause a rare and dangerous side effect. The vaccine can no longer be used in the European Union after the company voluntarily withdrew its marketing authorization. The application to withdraw the vaccine was made on March 5th and came into effect Tuesday. Similar applications will be made in the coming months in the UK and other countries that had approved the vaccine, known as Vaxzevria. The decision to withdraw it brings to an end the use of the jab, which was heralded by Boris Johnson as a triumph of British science and credited with saving more than 6 million lives. AstraZeneca said the vaccine was being removed from markets for commercial reasons, so the vaccine was no longer being manufactured or supplied, having been superseded by updated vaccines that tackle new variants, also those rare and serious side effects. Also, there was that. There was also that. The vaccine has come under intense scrutiny in recent months over a very rare side effects, which causes blood clots and low blood platelet counts. AstraZeneca admitted in court documents lodged with the High Court in February that the vaccine can, in very rare cases, cause TTS, which stands for thrombosis and something else syndrome, has been linked to at least 81 deaths in the UK, as well as hundreds of serious injuries. AstraZeneca is being sued by more than 50 alleged victims and grieving relatives in high court case. But AstraZeneca has insisted its decision to withdraw the vaccine is not linked to the court case or its admission that it can cause TTS. It says the timing was pure coincidence. Pure coincidence. They're incredibly proud of the role the vaccine has played. I guess we'll take your apologies now. I guess if anybody wants to call in and apologize for saying we were wrong about anything ever, the lines will be open for you. Kidding, of course, but we can continue on this. Let's go now to clip number 32. Here is the a news report about the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine being withdrawn from worldwide markets.
The World Health Organization says there's no reason to stop the use of the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine. The statement comes after Bulgaria, Romania, and Thailand joined three Scandinavian countries in suspending inoculations with this particular vaccine. They were reacting to reports of blood clots in some people who'd received the shot, although there is no evidence of any link.
We can say that, yes, blood clots are happening after vaccination, but they're almost certainly not caused by the vaccinations.
There's nothing to suggest a causal link between clots and the vaccine. So there seems no reason to be worried about either vaccine being used in the UK rollout.
AstraZeneca admits COVID vaccine can cause rare side effect. They currently admitted in court for the first time that the COVID jab can cause a deadly blood clotting side effect.
AstraZeneca has told a British court that its COVID vaccine can cause a rare side effect, which can lead to blood clots and low platelet count. The company is currently facing a barrage of class action suits in the UK.
We told you so. I guess we told you so. So that's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by InfoWarsStore.com. InfoWarsStore.com, the only way that we stay on air and in the fight, you support us by going there and buying one of the fantastic supplements or survival products, including 10% off storable food and water filters, which may be of increasing importance as we're going towards World War III and things are going to get crazy. Once again, don't say we didn't warn you, and also provide you with what you need to avoid the horrible fate that the globalists have in store for us. InfoWarsStore.com. We have a lot of videos to get through, and I guess we can just continue on the roll. This is the We Told You show, where we knew all of this from the beginning. We can go to clip number 17, where once again, the warnings of the likes of Alex Jones and InfoWars were mocked, belittled, and ignored, only to be realized to be absolutely real, if not underplayed by Alex. And only once the damage has been done, once the effect has become irreversible, they're willing to admit that, yeah, this was the case the entire time. Let's watch clip 17 here.
For the first time, the EPA is limiting the amount of so-called forever chemicals found in drinking water. The new rule targets synthetic chemicals known as PFAs, which are linked to serious health effects, including an increased risk of cancer. The chemicals can be found in the tap water supplying hundreds of millions of Americans. The EPA now requiring water companies to lower six types of PFAs to near zero levels. Water utilities will have up to 5 years to reach that goal. The bipartisan infrastructure law provides $9 billion to help with the contamination.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much more information you need. And we've said it many times, but, you know, the reason that they don't want InfoWars on the air is because you can't point to PFAs and say that nobody knew that this was bad for you. You can't point to the forever chemicals in the tap water or the fluoride or the atrazine, the pesticides, the glyphosate. You cannot point to these and say, well, we just didn't know how bad they were until now, because Alex Jones knew 15 years ago. Which means these people knew 15 years ago. Which means for the past 15 or 20 years, they have knowingly poisoned your tap water, knowingly allowed plastics to pervade life as we know it and get everywhere and poison everything and cause untold amounts of damage, cancer, hormone manipulation, deformation.
of the most severe type. They can't say that we're just figuring this out because InfoWars was reporting on it decades ago. So how did we know and they didn't? Wouldn't it be convenient for them to be able to pretend like nobody knew this was happening? Well, they can't pretend that if Alex Jones is on the air 20 years ago telling you exactly what they're saying now. Just like they can't say they didn't know that the vaccine causes blood clots when we've been reporting that from the very beginning. You can go back in time and see all of our coverage on this. It's very easy for them, if they have full control of the communication systems, to simply ignore or silence people speaking out about this. They have their controlled information channels in the mainstream media that can disguise or undermine conclusions that are drawn from these revelations. But not if InfoWars is here to point to our past work and say, how come we knew? How come we knew and you didn't? Well, you did. You did know, which meant you did it on purpose. Since you could have stopped it at any point, you chose not to. As we've said before, especially with the, you know, they're turning the frogs gay. The thing that people find weird about that is they are turning the frogs gay. If you were to say it in a very scientific, well, an unintended consequence of the pesticide usage is that the hormonal behavior of frogs can be affected in downstream waters. And everybody gets that that's true. When you say they're putting things in the water that turn the frogs gay, well, that sounds crazy, but it's true. But they knew it was true. They knew it had this effect, and yet they did it anyway. Which means it's on purpose. Which means it's by design. Especially the fact that they actually covered up the effects, had lobbying efforts to stop the government from putting controls on things like PFAS. They did it on purpose, and they've desperately tried to stop anybody from exposing this. I don't know what conclusion you could come to other than that. We have so many videos to get to today. Let's just keep going through some of these. Let's go down to clip number 20. Here's RFK Jr. talking about Bill Gates. Look, another enemy of InfoWars from decades back. Finally being unmasked as the demon that he truly is. Clip 20, RFK Jr. on Bill Gates.
The lockdowns really destroyed that whole illusion of globalization. But, you know, it was a money-making enterprise for Gates. And the vaccines are the same thing. He gives the money, gets tax deductions for giving the money to the WHO. Mm-hmm. He gains control of the WHO. The WHO pays for finances, the health ministries in virtually every country in Latin, in Africa. Mm. So he can then say, as a condition of getting that money, this is what WHO does. As a condition to get that money, you have to show that you vaccinated a certain percentage of your population. It's right. The milestone. And the vaccines that they're buying are owned by companies that Gates owns. Oh, it's this system where, you know, at the end, the punchline on almost all of his philanthropic projects are that he ends up making money. Oh, I don't look into his head and, you know, and speculate about why he thinks the way that he does. But he did the same thing with Microsoft. Microsoft was, it was a monopoly. It's to control every aspect of vertically integrate and control every aspect of the domain of the landscapes and you know, be able to monetize philanthropy to make yourself richer.
It's the revenge of the nerds. Whatever girl rejected him in high school, it is on you.
Philanthropy. You know, they're philanthropists. Isn't this what we always say? Again, it's kind of exhausting at this point. Just watching slowly but surely everybody migrate over towards us. And the problem isn't that, you know, we're being vindicated. That's obviously a good thing. It's the frustrating slowness with which the move is being made. You know, there's a reason that Alex Jones got a reputation of being out of control, of being over the top, because these things are war crimes against us. I used to always use the metaphor, the imagery of, you know, if there's some guy running around pulling his hair out, yelling at you to go underground because the bombs are coming. He seems crazy until the bombs start falling all around you. In which case, you don't casually stroll towards the bomb shelter, right? You realize that, oh, that guy running around being insane was correct. This is insane. This is crazy. We're under attack. Get in the bomb shelter now. Prepare to defend yourself. This is the frustrating part. As people realize that we're right now, and instead of treating it with the seriousness it deserves, it still takes on this, like, academic, intellectual, mainstream media attitude of just like, yes, the government is now putting limitations on PFAS that cause cancer and destroy your hormones and are in our tap water. It's in everybody's tap water. It's in the fresh snow that falls on the North Pole now. It's literally everywhere. And so in a few years, they will have implemented some laws that will potentially reduce some of the forever chemicals in some of the tap water through some vague mechanism. When the real correct response is, there's poison in the tap water. We are under attack. All of these things are happening all at once in the same way with the same cover-ups going on because humanity is under attack by a cabal of psychopaths. So great. I'm glad you're now moving towards the bomb shelter, realizing that we're right about the fact we're under attack. Just maybe pick up the speed a little bit. Maybe pick up the intensity. Maybe your reaction should be equivalent to the attack that you're under and not just casually strolling towards the bomb shelter. It seems like what we're doing. We have a lot to discuss. There's the American brown shirts, black shirts, whatever you want to call them, Antifa, beating up journalists. We've got more trans movement stuff. We have, of course, a lot of news about Israel as they bomb tents in Rafah, where refugees are gathered. But, you know, the good news is that there's an awakening happening, slowly but surely. Things that were verboten before, unable to be discussed, are being discussed. And the criminal activity of our leadership is being exposed for all to see. Could not be more obvious the way that the Trump lawsuits are being conducted, that they're all just completely and utterly fraudulent. Got Stormy Daniels in court. You've got the court in that trial putting gag orders on Trump, not letting him leave New York City, not letting him speak out about the case, not letting him campaign when we are less than 6 months away from a presidential election. And could not be more obvious. The major updates are Stormy Daniels testifying in that just ridiculous circus of a case, as well as Judge Cannon in the classified documents case, indefinitely postponing the trial start date, as it was revealed, the Jack Smith's classified document trials rife with evidence tampering. Judge Cannon set hearings on key motions, including Walton Alta's motion to dismiss for selective and vindictive prosecution. It's also been uncovered that the documents themselves were handled by the official government body meant to handle these things. When they told Trump to come pick them up and where to take them, he did that. And then they said that he had classified documents and are going after him for it. Don Trump is, of course, rebelling against the unlawful and completely arbitrary gag orders that he's under. He's found a clever way to get around them. Go to clip number 25 here. This is Trump outside of the courthouse in New York City, expertly avoiding violating the judge's gag order by simply reading the mainstream media reporting about the case and not offering any of his own input. We go now to clip number 25. Here's Trump outside of the courthouse yesterday.
I'm going to take you to Lower Manhattan and former President Trump.
Are you a victim of extortion?
The country is on fire. There are protests all over the country. I've never seen anything like this. Many graduation ceremonies are being canceled. They canceled, as you know, in Colombia. They're canceling a lot of them. And we have a president that just refuses to talk because he can't talk. You know that. So does everyone else. Some of the statements made about this witch hunt on CNN, fake news CNN, Michael Moore said the proof of falsifying records has not been accomplished. On Good Morning America, they said, we heard that expense payments to lawyers are legal expenses. You pay a lawyer expense payments. We didn't put it down as construction costs, the purchase of sheetrock, the electrical costs. The legal expense that we paid was put down as legal expense. There's nothing else you could say. You don't have to put down anything, I guess. But we put down legal expense was legal expense. Is that a correct statement, Mr. Attorney? And everyone's saying, oh, gee, that's the fraud. That's what they're trying to get us on. The fact that we call it legal expense, a legal expense, they marked it down in the books. The check was signed. And the other thing, this was approved by all agencies. Everybody saw this. There was nothing being hidden at all. That's what they're all writing now. There's been nothing hidden. And it went through agencies, and I guess it went through the IRS also. It went through IRS. It went through the FEC. It went through everything. Also, NBC Today showed the challenges that there is no smoking gun, no email or tape to prove the president's intent. They don't have a way to prove that. That's NBC Today show. And then Fox News, Katie Kasky, said that the gag order is unconstitutional, which of course it is. The gag order is unconstitutional. So with all that's going on, they have no case. Every single legal scholar that I see, I mean, maybe there's somebody out there, some whack job, but virtually everyone that I've seen has said there's absolutely no case. It's a case that shouldn't have been brought. The previous DA wouldn't bring it. Brand didn't want to bring it, and he brought it because I'm running in number one place. This all comes out of the White House and crooked Joe Biden. This comes from the White House, and it's all Biden because it's an attack on his political opponent. That hasn't happened in this country. It does happen in third world countries, but it hasn't happened in this country, and it's a shame. And the trial is a very unfair trial. It's a very, very unfair trial. The good news is they have nothing. Thank you.
So that's Trump again, quoting the mainstream media and just saying what they say about the case. No smoking gun. Just basically ridiculous, unprecedented, a violation of every political norm that we've come to expect in this country. The true attack against democracy. I mean, it's just strange. It's just strange living through this. The fact that not only is the United States government so blatantly engaged in this partisan lawfare, just out in the open in front of everybody. I mean, like we said, they put Jack Smith as the attack dog, just going after Trump in a variety of different ways, not because there was some criminal activity they had to get to the bottom of, but just going, that guy, go get that guy. Come up with something to get Donald Trump. Classified documents, phone calls about elections, Stormy Daniels, whatever, doesn't matter, just get him. It's unprecedented and ridiculous. But the most unprecedented and ridiculous part of it, not just that they're doing it out in the open in front of everybody, that they're actually portraying it as the opposite of what it is, and people are buying it. They're portraying it as saving democracy by weaponizing the judicial system against their political opponents. Now, the only thing I could say would be, you know, careful what you wish for. You're opening up a Pandora's box here. You're setting a precedent that is incredibly dangerous. That's only on the probably false assumption that Republicans would ever do anything like this in return. They should. I mean, they should. If this is the game that they're playing now, we have to play it to win. But I seriously doubt that. I don't see that happening anytime soon, despite the fact that the Democrats are just the most corrupt organization in America. And if you were to put the same level of scrutiny on any campaign from a Democratic candidate, you would be able to destroy them utterly. But that threat doesn't really hold any weight when they keep making that threat and then not following through. In other words, when they impeached Trump multiple times over ridiculous nonsense that was not impeachable in the slightest, and Republicans warned, oh, you're opening up a Pandora's box here. What if we do it to you? Now, 4 years on of massive crime, open borders, total treasonous activity from the Biden administration, and they won't even hint at an impeachment. We'll return to this story on the other side. We'll be joined in the next hour by Andrew Ridoff. We'll talk about how you can keep yourself safe with the increasing intrusion of AI into your technological life. Talking about the trials and tribulations of Donald Trump. Some interesting developments in both cases, really, against Trump, and we'll get into how this, you know, fits into everything here in just a second. This was the reporting by CNN. Paula Reed says, quote, it became really heated, the exchange between Stormy Daniels and Trump's lawyer, Nicholas, I guess his last name. It became really heated because Nicholas confirms you call him names all the time, talking about Trump. Daniel starts to sort of yell, saying, yes, because he made fun of me first. This is devolving pretty quickly. This is pretty toddler-esque conduct and a lack of accountability. Which, let's just really think about this. Defense attorney says you call him names all the time. Daniel says yes, because he made fun of me first. This, I remind you, is the trial that will apparently determine the future of American politics. And it's literally devolved into, yeah, but she started it. No, but he called me names first, though. I mean, talk about idiocracy. Talk about just, she uses the word toddler-esque. I would expect more of my toddlers, personally. And she says, you know, what the defense is very effectively getting at is Daniel's disdain for the defendant. In other words, proving that Stormy Daniels concocted this whole thing because she hates Donald Trump and she's going after him. She happened to have a tool to do that, their past relationship. Has nothing to do with actually breaking the law, has nothing to do with anything abusive or illegal or fraudulent. Stormy Daniels, like all of the people in this case, are basically on a toddler level understanding of how the world works. And they just don't like him and aren't getting their way, so they're lashing out. And this includes the judges and the prosecutors and the DAs and the operatives in the Biden administration that are coordinating all of this. We're being run by toddlers. Toddlers with the ability to throw you in a concrete box for the rest of your life. So CNN even recognizes how, quote, very effective and dramatic this cross-examination is. The other reporter from CNN responds, saying that Donald Trump has leaned back a little bit. He's very engaged, very animated, very agitated over the course of the morning. Not so much anymore. Stormy Daniels, on the other hand, arms crossed. These things are very tense, starting to get very frustrated. At one point, it seems she was raising her voice as well. It underscores that there has been a very clear shift, not just in how they're acting, but in where this is going. Honestly, it's just pathetic. This is nothing. I mean, this trial was over literally nothing. No crime was committed. Nobody was taken advantage of. Nobody was hurt. No campaign was, unfairly given an advantage. This is literally nothing. It's annoying we even have to talk about it. Trump's lawyers have moved for a mistrial over Stormy Daniels' testimony. Crooked Judge Merchant strikes it down, however. Judge Merchant agrees with Bragg and Biden's attorneys, saying that Stormy Daniels has credibility to testify about an alleged affair, even though she's repeatedly denied such an affair over the years, and even went on record by issuing an official statement denying such an affair. So this, of course, has to do with the quote I read a little bit earlier, with Stormy Daniels saying, I keep having to deny this ever happened. I've denied it in 2006. I denied it in 2011, in 2016, in 2017, and now in 2018. I keep having to deny on official record that this affair ever happened. And now, a few years later, suddenly it happened again. Now, the obvious, downfall in this strategy by the prosecutors is their entire case rests on the testimony of this woman who has proven beyond any doubt whatsoever that she can't be trusted. So what are we even doing here? What is this? Trump's attorneys moved to strike much of Stormy Daniels' testimony before she took the witness stand, but Judge Merchant still allowed the unnecessary salacious details in the courtroom. Once prosecutors began asking Stormy Daniels detailed questions about her sexual encounter with Trump, the judge acted shocked and admonished Trump's lawyers for not objecting to her testimony. Prosecutors are asking how tall she is relative to Trump and whether there is a power dynamic between them. Now they're asking about her alleged sexual affair, the position they were in, whether they were intoxicated, uncomfortable, how they closed it off. I mean, it's like to such a point, like you can kind of understand their strategy, where you want to get the most salacious and disgusting headlines to draw more attention to this, to make it more of a media circus, to get it in people's minds more that Trump is somehow a bad guy for having sex with a porn star. But it seems like this is kind of played out. Like, do we even really want to hear this? Like, just what is this? I mean, these things happen in real trials. The salacious details come out because they actually are pertinent to a crime that was committed, a murder that happened, lies that the people involved told on national media. Now, I'm just thinking back to, obviously, the Monica Lewinsky affair under Bill Clinton, which has similar overtones, but also just because O.J. Simpson died recently, it's just, I watched a lot of content about that from the 90s, and that was the same type of thing where every day more salacious details were coming out. But again, in that case, it was a double homicide, and the details may have given you some insight into what led to that horrific and bloody attack. In this case, just like, okay, so there was a consensual sexual liaison or sexual meeting, and then years later she threatened to go to the media, but he paid her not to. Like, and now they're asking about what position they had sex in. Like, what? Just what is this? Who cares? this is the strange thing. They want to portray themselves as like upholding some sort of standard or something. These people are just mud creatures trying to drag us down into the mud with them. Paul Ingracia says, in a flagrant violation of New York's rules of evidence and judicial ethic guidelines, the judge is allowing Stormy Daniels to run wild with her highly prejudicial testimony, running roughshod over the objection of Trump's attorneys, and allowing Daniels to vividly describe their sexual encounter. Trump's attorneys moved for a mistrial over Stormy Daniels' testimony, but the crooked judge rejected it. What's the jury to do with that? You know, quote, what's the jury to do with that? It's still extraordinarily prejudicial to insert safety concerns into a trial about business records. There's no way to unring that bell, in our view, Trump attorneys Todd Blanche argued. As a threshold matter, Mr. Blanche, I agree that there were things that would have been better left unsaid. I think the witness was a little difficult to control, Judge Merchant said, according to ABC News. Merchant added, I don't believe we're at the point where a mistrial is warranted. I'm also surprised that there were not more objections. Unbelievable gaslighting. So Trump's attorneys are objecting. The judge is overruling their objections and allowing the testimony to continue. And at the end, when the attorney is like, you know, what was that? Why were they allowed to talk about all this stuff? It has nothing to do with the trial as it stands. Why would you allow this in? He's like, well, you should have objected more. But they were objecting, and he was overruling them. I mean, this is... blatant. I mean, and these, you know, some of these quotes are from CNN. Like, this isn't even something that anybody in America should have trouble wrapping their head around. This entire proceeding is utterly baseless, totally fraudulent, completely manipulated. The judge is just acting completely lawlessly, just doing whatever the hell he wants, whenever the hell he wants, in order to cripple Trump's political campaign. It's so very simple. And the sad thing is that most Americans are just fine with it.
Ranking Member Wild and members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to discuss the importance of protecting the freedoms of speech and expression. My name is Chris Pavlovsky. I'm a native of Toronto, Canada, and the chairman and CEO of Rumble. When I founded Rumble in 2013, incumbent platforms had become beholden to large creators, brands, and large corporations. Rumble provided an alternative for small and independent creators to speak their minds, express their opinions, own their narrative, build communities, and maximize their earnings. Our company was founded on a mission to protect a free and open internet, as we believe everyone benefits when there is a diverse marketplace of ideas, opinions, and dialogues. In late 2020 and into 2021, we realized the power of our mission as millions of users followed creators to the emerging platform with little to no marketing. Some of Rumble's largest creators, including former Congressman Devin Nunes, Dan Bongino, Glenn Greenwald, and former Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard, also joined the platform during this time. As a result, Rumble saw its average monthly active users increase dramatically from 1.6 million in the third quarter of 2020 to 36 million in the third quarter of 2021. In other words, we saw an increase of 22.5 times the number of users in just one calendar year. In September of 2022, Rumble successfully went public, relocating our headquarters to the United States and trading on the NASDAQ under the ticker symbol RUM, R-U-M. We have expanded our video content into new verticals like sports, lifestyle, hip-hop, and video gaming. Beyond the video sharing platform, Rumble now offers the Rumble Advertising Center, Rumble Studio live streaming software, and the Rumble Cloud. Freedom of speech and freedom of expression are the cornerstones of a democratic society. I know that's not a foreign idea to the members on this subcommittee who have witnessed these rights used to protest tyrannical governments around the world and inequalities here in the United States. Freedom of expression is so important that not only is it the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, but it is also Article 19 in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Without these freedoms, we may have never learned the stories of Frederick Douglass during the abolition movement in the 1830s, or witnessed the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the women's rights movements of the 1970s, or the Arab Spring in the early 2010s. It is extremely troubling to me that in 2024, I have to come before the U.S. Congress to testify that these fundamental rights are being threatened. For years, we saw platforms shadow ban ideas they did not agree with. It was subtle suppression of ideas and opinions that did not fit the norm as dictated by algorithms. Today, the censorship we see is much more overt. Governments are acting in ways we only imagine happening 50 to 60 years ago, openly asking platforms to censor and take down disfavored content. They are back in the business of thinking they know what's best, dictating and controlling conversations and stripping the human right to speak and share freely. These are not theoretical fears. These things are happening, and I know this personally as the CEO of a platform that receives demands from governments around the world. One of the first instances of government censorship we experienced did not come as a surprise, as it came from communist China. Communist governments often crack down on a variety of freedoms, including freedom of expression. However, we were surprised in 2022 when we received a request from the French government to block certain news sources. People can certainly question the trustworthiness of news sources, but it should not be any government's job to selectively eliminate access to information. Rather than comply with the French government's request, we simply disabled the access to the platform in France and challenged the legality of this demand.
So that's the CEO of Rumble speaking out for free speech. Rumble reveals censorship demands from surprising list of countries a CEO to testify on free speech threats. We'll be back on the other side, talk with an expert about how you can protect your information and maintain your privacy in a world beset by AI. Stay with us. Joined now by Andrew Riddoch. He is the CEO of Liberation Tech, a technology company which hosts cloud servers, provides cybersecurity, and is known for being the pioneer of liquid-cooled edge data centers. Prior to building Liberation Tech, Riddoch was the executive office of the President of the United States, was with the executive office of the President of the United States as a key figure within the Office of Presidential Advance for Donald Trump. He's with us today to talk about how you can protect your privacy online amid the rapid adoption of AGI by tech companies that profit off your data. That website is Liberation Tech, and that's T-E-K. So liberationtek.com. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So AI or AGI, artificial general intelligence, which just means AI of a particular level that's equal or exceeds human intelligence. What is the threat that AI poses to the privacy of internet users today?
Well, we have to look at AI as really a tool. So first and foremost, who controls this tool? What is the purpose of this tool? One trend that we're starting to see come out of Silicon Valley is using AI to suppress information that they don't necessarily agree with. Oftentimes they refer to it as misinformation. I believe that is just alternative information. But they're using these AI tools to replace, you know, humans, content moderators, and becoming more and more efficient in completely suppressing alternative ideas. And so where it becomes very dangerous is now we will be living in a 1948 scenario where there is only one side of the story being presented. And then you add on top of that the deepfake type of technology that can easily persuade potential voters through micro-targeting and some really advanced technology to control not only the voting habits of the American people, but the consumer habits as well.
Yeah, and of course, we know that the American government is very interested in using these AI companies to their own ends. I believe today that there was a story about Microsoft receiving a massive grant or investment from the federal government, Microsoft's top secret generative AI for U.S. spies, what you need to know. So, I mean, the federal government is very involved in this. When you ask about who controls it, you know, it's clearly people that want to keep this stuff silent. And so what can people do to, you know, circumvent these new AI controls that are being implemented? Because they are incredibly powerful, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, I think it goes a step further. Not only is the federal government giving money to these technology companies to essentially buy them out, but you also see the Biden administration fighting tooth and nail in the courts to, you know, remain accessible and keep these companies accessible to them so that they can do what they did in 2020, where it's essentially take down any narrative or social media post that they don't necessarily agree with. And so, you know, what was revealed in the Twitter files is happening across all of these technology companies, where then the Biden campaign, now the Biden administration, is giving a clear directive to these individuals and, you know, making it so that these technology platforms are essentially a fifth arm or a fourth branch of the government. And, you know, it's really important, if you're looking to get away from those, use aligned companies that are not going to push AI on you without your consent, that aren't integrating and spying on you like Liberation. And, you know, you can start to regain your digital rights and your digital privacy from these companies by getting off of Gmail, by getting off of Zoom and Dropbox and YouTube and platforms alike.
And these things have been going on for a while, right? I mean, it now people are becoming more aware of AI, but how long have these tools been in place? Because, you know, there were times, especially during the last presidential election, where there would be a big story breaking, and yet Google would know to censor it like the minute it broke. So, like, I don't think you can really do that without AI. They somehow have AI trained to be able to recognize troublesome stories before they even, you know, really hit the mainstream in order to censor them. I mean, how long have these AI processes been in place? Because it seems like even though we're just now becoming aware of them, you know, as the wider public is becoming aware of them, they've been in place for a while, haven't they? Are they just becoming more sophisticated? And, you know, what's the danger of that progression as they become more and more sophisticated?
You know, it's been around for about the better part of a decade. Obviously, it was just really commercialized and announced to the larger population in the last year with ChatGPT. But this is a platform that is going to take years to build and perfect and refine. And you're right, we've seen these platforms being used. You know, they have them built into their email, into their search engines, into, you know, the algorithms on YouTube and everything else. And they're essentially building them to look for quote unquote problem words or phrases and immediately flag them. You know, they're essentially giving all control over to the AI, so there is no human review in most cases. And, you know, that's where it becomes incredibly troubling, because we're kind of giving up our rights and our freedom and control and just handing it over to this machine that, you know, admittedly has a human bias built into it.
Right, and built into it on purpose, right? I mean, that's part of what the government's participation in AI, you know, as you're saying, you know, giving them billions of dollars in order to buy them out. I think that's exactly right. And one of the ways that they're buying them out is they're saying you have to program in certain biases, certain restrictions into your AI, and in exchange, you'll get billions of dollars of taxpayer money. And you mentioned that the fact that they're not just scanning public posts and news reports, but they're actually scanning emails at this point. I mean, and this is,
oh, yeah,
this is insane to me. I mean, this is wild. Email for the last 20 years has been largely a secure way to share information, to communicate with one another, that for the most part, or at least as far as we know, is not as easily accessible by the big tech companies. You know, things like Twitter and Facebook, we know and have known for a while that on the back end, their engineers can access your DMs, they can access all your information, and that sort of comes part and parcel with being on these platforms. But email was always considered private. Like, nobody could check your email without your permission. But now you've got AI scanning it and telling you that they're scanning it. I mean, is this a new development, or has this always been going on? And what do people need to know about their personal emails being, you know, scanned by AI, as they obviously are?
Yeah, and it's your emails, they've always had access to that. But in most cases, it would require human review, humans catching it and flagging it. Now with the AI, they're much more proficient at the ability to scan and flag and essentially censor a lot of the emails that they don't necessarily like. If you use two words that they disagree with, it's not going to just end up in spam. It will never reach that recipient, because they'll just block it altogether. And so they've always had that capability, and it's not just your email. We've already seen it on platforms like Dropbox and Google Workspace, where they're looking at your documents, and if a document falls within what they deem to be outside of their terms and conditions, they'll take that document. You can't recover it. It's also in your video conferencing like Zoom. You know, they've really built it from not just a text search, but voice, document, video as well. And so now it's really becoming a, I think, problematic issue, because at any point, you know, these technology companies, because they own the entire platform, can flick a switch and, you know, maybe 100 million Americans no longer have access to their emails.
Right.
Yeah. And we saw just that in 2022 when the RNC's email deliverability just went to the floor.
Right. And I talked a little bit about that yesterday, text messages as well. I can't remember the exact numbers, but, you know, the DNC and the RNC would both send out very similar text messages. The RNC would get flagged as spam, but the DNC wouldn't. And I mean, this is clear election interference as far as I'm concerned, especially the disparity where it was something like, you know, 85% of the RNC's messages got flagged as spam, but only 25% of the DNC's. I mean, if you're only delivering, you know, less than a quarter of the messages to the Republicans, but three quarters of the messages to Democrats, clearly this is going to have a massive effect downstream from all of this. What can we do? What can the average person do to combat this or circumvent this? Is there anything at this point, or is the right move to actually get involved and like change and take over these AI systems? Like, what's got to be the strategy here? Because this is a new battlefield that the information war is being waged on. How should the info warriors listening to us now participate in this conflict?
Yeah, so I think that it is, you know, a battle that's been going on for a long time. But Christians, conservatives, you know, anyone outside of the Silicon Valley ideological box, we didn't really care, right? We were living our lives, trying to live the American dream, but the left has really forced us into this position where, you know, we have to fight back. And I always say it's not just about voting with your ballot every 2 years. It's about voting with your feet, talking to your friends and neighbors, making sure they know information about, you know, the election, about candidates, about policy. But it's also voting with your dollars. You know, there's approximately 100 million Americans that are ideologically aligned. And if we start voting with our dollars, we can make a massive impact in this capitalistic society. And that's why we at Liberation have built products and tools that allow for you to get away from those big tech companies and the platforms that we use. You know, we have, like you mentioned earlier, the web hosting so you can host your website or your application. But we've also built Hub for Teams, which is a unified platform. It replaces Zoom, Dropbox, Microsoft Teams, Google Workplace, Calendly, about 20 different applications. So not only are you ditching big tech, but you're saving money with us. We've also built Liberation Campaign, which is a MailChimp alternative that, you know, at least your company that you're working with is making sure that your emails are getting delivered, right? We're at least solving half of the battle there. And so if 100 million Americans start making that cognizant change, spending 10, 15 minutes a day just trying to support ideologically aligned companies, we can make a massive difference in a short amount of time and also ensure that information is reaching the end user so that they can be informed and can make their own informed decisions.
And I think that is the right move, because I mean, these tools are useful. We, you know, I couldn't do a lot of what I do just with my family, sharing things on Google Calendar or Google Photos. I mean, you know, we sort of prefer that to social media, because if you're sharing pictures of your kids or whatever, you can just do it privately. And these are very useful tools that a lot of people use. And especially in the modern world, you're really giving up an advantage if you're not if you're not using these. So to have an alternative seems like the correct move. Talk to us a little bit more about some of these suites of products that you have, because I don't, they sound like this is the correct move. We got to get away from Google. We got to get away from these big tech companies that are very much in bed with the federal government and move towards companies like Liberation Tech. Again, liberationtech.com. Talk to us a little bit more about finding alternatives to these massive big tech platforms.
Yeah, so if you go to our website under products, you'll see kind of the list of products and services that we offer. Most of them have free options, so you can try it out risk-free and, you know, experience it yourself. But one of the things that we also thought was very important and built in is a simplicity to learn and to adapt. We've made it very easy for you to take all of your data from those Silicon Valley companies and import it right into ours. We've also made it so that the user experience, how you're using these tools, is familiar. So you're not having to relearn a platform. You know, in just a matter of minutes, you're going to be like, okay, this all starts to make sense. And that's a critical piece, because not only do we have to build an alternative, we have to try to build something that is better than what is currently on the market. And that is exactly what we've done with Hub for Teams, Liberation Campaign, our web development teams, everything else. And you can sign up in just a couple of minutes and you'll be up and running.
And, you know, one of the disappointing things about alternatives like this is some of them you can trust for a while, but eventually the government has ways of making you, you know, compelling you to work with them. The latest story, Proton Mail for a long time has billed itself as a, you know, the private alternative to Gmail and, you know, total privacy. They'll, you know, they're based in Switzerland, you know, privacy is embedded in their constitution. And yet the headline from yesterday, Proton Mail hands info to government, but says it's not Google. Proton Mail, a managed email server popular with the crypto community, surrendered a user's information to Spanish authorities, leaving privacy rights advocates to claim it had violated its sworn promise to protect user data. So they were, you know, delivered a subpoena to, you know, give information on somebody, and they essentially were forced to comply. How do we avoid this? I mean, how do you get around the fact that the government can, if it so chooses, shut down alternative platforms if they don't comply with their restrictions? I mean, are there ways to combat this legally, or, you know, just apply to the First Amendment, and, you know, in America they can't do that? How do you deal with the ultimate inevitability of the government trying to force you one way or another to give up your principles?
Yeah, so we've thought that through long and hard, because we've seen that kind of time and time before. The first thing that we did is we built it in a zero-knowledge architecture, so we do not mine, monitor, or monetize any of our clients' data. We've essentially shut all of the back doors and threw them away. And then we also started incorporating cybersecurity that encrypts it to a degree where we ourselves can't even access it. So even if we have an entity coming to us asking for us to comply, it'll be very difficult, because we simply don't have access. They will have to go to that end user, as the Constitution and courts have set it up, and actually receive that information from them. They're kind of following the actual laws instead of doing this kind of FISA workaround, warrantless search and surveillance.
Yeah, and that seems to make sense. You know, all these things, it seems like this should be obvious from the beginning. I mean, this is how it should work, is that your information should be encrypted, and the tech company that you're, you know, using as a platform shouldn't have access to your private information, and they should make that a part of their architecture. Why hasn't that been more of a trend? Is that not, I mean, does the wider American public just not care if they're spied on? I mean, I always think it's strange that they've got all this information on me, yet I still get like ads for menstrual products in Spanish. And it's like, well, they have all this information on me and they're advertising something I can't even understand the language they're advertising to me in. Why do they take so much data if they can't even figure out who I am on the basic level? And why aren't more, you know, internet tools, you know, embedded with this from the very beginning, that it's encrypted and that they're not spying on you? I mean, is that not a market edge? Or I guess you guys understand that it is, because, you know, people are looking for that alternative.
Yeah, we've seen this being kind of a new phenomenon. You think of just the past couple of years, people are really starting to wake up and think about these things. Now, for so long, it was like, okay, accept the terms and conditions, hand over our data. Nothing was impacting us directly. And so what did it matter to us? But I think, you know, kind of getting to the root of why, you know, it comes back to the same thing as everything else, money. Right? Google is making over $150 billion a year on monetizing consumer data and then selling it right back to advertisers. And so if they were to do the things that we're doing, they would lose out on $150 billion plus revenue stream every single year. And they're just not willing to do that. They're putting profits over their users' information. And that's why, you know, we see all these technology companies getting breached and information leaked year after year with no real resolution, even though it's painfully obvious how they can stop it once and for all.
Yeah, and let me ask you, we've only about five more minutes tonight, and there's a couple important things. Cyber attacks are increasingly prevalent in the mainstream media and in headlines that you're reading. Just yesterday, there was a big cyber attack on the UK. They blamed it on the Chinese government, but it was an attack on their an infiltration of the UK Defense Department's cybersecurity. What is the threat of a major cyber pandemic? And again, how can Americans and how can our audience help to mitigate some of the impacts that may be felt if there were to be some sort of full-fledged cyber war taking place and server farms being taken down? I mean, what can we do to protect ourselves from that? Or how big of a threat is that, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it is a major threat, especially if, you know, nation states like Russia and China and North Korea to a degree really want to impact and disrupt the United States. And you look at that story out of the UK, but what isn't really being told is who was that information being stored with, right? Mm-hmm. Governments very rarely actually have their own cloud infrastructure. They're using, here in the United States, you know, AWS, Azure, Google. And, you know, when you look at those platforms, they oftentimes still have third-party integrations. And so that's where it becomes very dangerous, because Microsoft Teams has, I believe, over 700 third-party partners that have access to the data. So it's not just about breaching Microsoft Teams. They can breach any one of those 700-plus partners and steal and access all of the data. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes kind of this issue where you've made money and made data available to your marketing partners and your third-party developers and everything else, but you're leaving that back door open to the nefarious hackers as well. And, you know, whether that information can be used in a digital way, and very much like how TikTok collects information, not just on the TikTok app, but from every application on your device, but it can also be used to impersonate American citizens. You know, I think the scope that, you know, a cyber attack like that could actually lead to is still yet to be seen. But, you know, cybersecurity, they could take down our power grid. They could, you know, take down telecommunications. They could take down a lot of things. And, you know, not only the UK, but the US has admitted, you know, these foreign actors have infiltrated our systems. There have been several outages where, you know, they claim it was a technical error, but, you know, all signs point to a cybersecurity breach. They just won't admit it because you take out NOTAM and, you know, the FAA here in the United States. You know, if China is now controlling our skies, that's a incredibly dangerous thing and would scare a lot of Americans from traveling.
Yeah, and then maybe the scariest part is not being able to tell whether something's a cyber attack or an accident and having to rely on the authorities who won't tell you the truth in the first place. You know, one of the ways the way that we at InfoWars, you know, talk about these issues is it's sort of a dual front that you have to fight on. We want to change policies to prevent things from happening. You know, a good example would be like poison in the water, you know, plastics and fluoride in the water. One, you want to change the policy that allows this to happen. But while that's going on, you got to have a water filter to protect yourself, right? So when it comes to AI and the danger of cybersecurity and surveillance, we obviously want the government to change its policy and provide more for the privacy of internet users. But you've got to be protecting yourself in the meantime. How does Liberation Tech confront these two different ways of protecting Americans' privacy?
Yeah. So, like I said, we're already, you know, fully compliant because we don't monetize or monitor or access any of our clients' data. So we're really focused on that privacy part. But we're also integrating the cybersecurity tools that allow for us to defend against some of these advanced hacks. And so, you know, really, I think the most impactful change will come out of the consumers, right? If we all start spending money and prioritizing data privacy, cybersecurity, and things like that, moving our business to those types of companies, then, you know, we'll actually see change in the private sector. Because let's be honest, the government, they're terrible when it comes to being proactive about things. They're very much a reactive entity. And so, you know, we shouldn't be waiting and hoping that the government is going to step in and say, hey, big tech, you can't keep stealing all of our users' data. You need to better protect their privacy and security. And so I think that really voting with our dollars is one of the most impactful ways we can make change.
I think you're exactly right. I'm very excited to try out some of this technology. LiberationTech.com. That's T-E-K, LiberationTech.com. Andrew Riddaugh, CEO, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for helping to protect our privacy against the big tech monsters, sir.
Thank you.
I have a lot of videos about Israel to show you. And I'm wondering where to begin. I think maybe we'll start with clip number... I was going to say clip number 19, because General Mark Milley, total traitor, should honestly be in jail or worse for his... The actual coup he pulled off, just unbelievable. They did it right in front of everybody and bragged about it while they did it. He and Nancy Pelosi usurping the power of the presidency from Donald Trump. Again, just it's completely insane that this guy is not in prison right now. Just that's wild enough as it is. But he basically is asked about the way that Israel is conducting itself in Gaza. And his defense is to demonize America and basically say we have no place to talk because of our past actions. And I think it represents, I mean, it's not even having to do with Israel. It just represents the destruction of American history, even by the leaders of our own military. It's really disgusting, and we'll go to that in just a second, but just to sort of set up, you know, where this goes, let's go first to clip number 21. Here's Piers Morgan really grilling a Israeli spokesperson on the fact that they apparently have no idea and don't care how many civilians that they've killed so far. Let's watch.
How many civilians do you believe you've killed?
We don't have exact figures. As you know, it's the fog of war.
But you've got exact numbers for Hamas terrorists you've killed. Why wouldn't you know how many civilians you've killed?
Because obviously our focus is to go after the Hamas terrorists. And
that does imply that you're putting a bigger premium on killing Hamas terrorists in terms of numbers and accountability than you are on innocent civilians. That can't be right, surely. If you know exactly how many Hamas terrorists you've killed, you must know how many civilians you've killed. Otherwise, you're prioritizing the lives of terrorists over innocent people.
Piers, with respect, don't put words into my mouth, please. I didn't say exactly 14,000. I said around 14,000, whereas Hamas will come out with precise numbers that statisticians will look at.
Give me a ballpark number for civilians.
Well, of course, you can use the ballpark as far as the Hamas figures, which I reject as being false.
Well, if they're false, why would you give me those?
I gave you the numbers that I had.
No, you've told me you know how many Hamas terrorists you've killed, but you don't seem to have any idea how many civilians you've killed. I'm just bemused. Why wouldn't you keep count of both?
I don't have that information to give you, Piers. If I did, I would.
You've literally no idea how many civilians you've been killing.
I can tell you definitively that our aim is to go after Hamas.
No, we've done it successfully. I'm sorry to push you on this. That's quite extraordinary. You're an official spokesman for the Israeli government, and you have no idea how many civilians you've killed. I thought you just told me that you were particularly careful about not killing civilians. But if you don't know how many you've killed, how can you say that with any certainty?
Because even if you were to go by a ratio of the Hamas figures, we would still be far ahead of any
Western
army. That
wasn't my question. You know it wasn't my question.
I don't have the information.
You literally have no idea how many civilians you've killed.
It's not that I don't know. I'm not authorized to give the information. I don't have the information.
That's complete nonsense. Why are you authorized to give me the number of terrorists you've killed, but not a number of civilians? I don't understand. Can you explain?
Piers, we will go after Hamas. We will ensure that we...
You want me to believe you're being incredibly careful about how many civilians you're killing, and you have an amazing exemplary record, but you don't know how many civilians you're killing. So how do I know you've been careful?
Piers, when the dust settles, we will come out with the proper numbers. Hamas runs to the press daily
The dust settles, a lot of people will have died, and you know how many Hamas you've killed, but you don't know how many civilians you've killed. And I'm just asking you why. Why is it you've kept a record of one, but not the other?
I personally don't have that information to give to you. You can ask me.
All right, this just sort of goes on and on. He never comes up with an answer. The fact I think is pretty obvious. They know how many they've killed, and it's a lot, and they don't want to tell you because it's a lot. That's why they know. They know how many they've killed. He literally says it right there. He says, "Well, I'm not authorized to give it to you because it's a lot." I think that might be the reason. I mean, we know at least to some degree. I mean, in their AI algorithmic killing machine that they're running, they have not only a not very good track record on actually identifying Hamas members. Sometimes it was as simple as, you know, this person made a phone call to a Hamas member, therefore they're a Hamas member, therefore we can kill them and their whole family. And it's anywhere from like 10 to 20 civilians are, you know, a reasonable casualty, you know, accidental killings. So, I mean, if that's the case and they've saying they're killed 14,000 Hamas members, first of all, then you have no proof that they're Hamas members at all anyway. It's not like they were given a trial. It's not like they were asked to present evidence. The AI just said, we think this guy's Hamas, and they said, approved. And then they killed that guy and the whole apartment block that he was in. So if they already killed 14,000, I mean, and you had an average of 10 civilians, you know, allowed to be killed for every one Hamas member, it's an untold but no doubt shocking number of civilians who have been killed. When asked about this, General Mark Milley went off on a truly anti-American rant. It's clearly prepared beforehand. He's got like stats on hand. So this was the strategy: is if people criticize the fact that Israel is indiscriminately bombing and killing civilians, here's a list of American atrocities to bring up. There's a lot to this. Let's go now to clip number 19. Here is General Mark Milley, somehow not just out of prison and not being brought up on charges of treason for usurping President Trump's authority on January 6th and the days before. But here he is basically just casting America as the bad guy in every world conflict. Let's watch.
Before we all get self-righteous about what Israel's doing, and I feel horrible for the innocent people in Gaza that are dying, but we shouldn't forget that we, the United States, killed a lot of innocent people in Mosul and Raqqa, that we, the United States, killed 12,000 innocent French civilians. And here we are on the 80th anniversary of Normandy, on the prep fires for Normandy. We destroyed 69 Japanese cities, not including Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We slaughtered people in massive numbers, innocent people who had nothing to do with their government, men, women, and children. War is a terrible thing. But if it's going to have meaning, if it's going to have any sense of morality, it has to be a political purpose, and it must be achieved rapidly with the least cost, and that you do by speed.
And one of the things I find personally very frustrating, the peace activists are actually the pro-war activists, and we're the peace activists. So you don't want war, you better be strong. You have to scare your adversary, and you have to be willing to act.
Why do you say the peace activists are war activists?
Because if you're the useful idiot of Iran and China literally there are people on college campuses saying, be doing a pro-North Korea mantra. If you think that creates peace, you are literally, why would Hamas ever give up? They have you marching for them. They're never going to give up. You are an infection inside of our society, and they are the reason they're not going to give up. If you want to stop these people, you have to be willing to be fierce.
They're out there supporting a terrorist organization whose very written charter calls for the death of all Jews, not just in Israel, worldwide. I mean, come on now. If you're going to support that, you're on the wrong side.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about this, and we'll say it on the other side of this commercial break. But like I said, I mean, he's got the stats on hand. He's got the numbers, the things to bring up. This is a prepared response. Again, sort of casting America as the bad guys in all of this. And that doesn't even get into the fact that that guy literally just said war is peace. I'm still sort of struggling to make sense of the clip we just heard. That was General Mark Milley. When asked about the overwhelming civilian casualties that Israel is inflicting on Gaza, his response is to rattle off the number of civilians America has killed over the last 100 years. It's a very strange argument to make, to be honest with you. Excuse me. I'm really just trying to wrap my head around what's the implications of this. So he talks about the civilians that we killed in Iraq. Okay, for whose benefit was that war waged? Let's talk about the civilians that we killed in France ahead of Normandy. Okay, for who was that war waged? He talks about the destruction of Japanese cities in World War II. Now, what argument is he making here? I really want to know. Either he's making the argument that those were good things, and that, yeah, America's killed civilians around the world by the hundreds of thousands. We haven't exactly benefited from that. Israel certainly has. And that's either a good thing, and so therefore the civilians being killed by Israel right now, it's just a necessary side effect of the wars being waged, or it's a bad thing that we killed all the civilians and America's the bad guy in these old conflicts. Now, what it's obviously missing is the overwhelming context, the context that puts all of America's actions from 80 years ago in a very different light than what Israel is doing to Gaza. I mean, these things are not equivalent whatsoever. He might have a point if America was, like, first put Japanese people in internment camps and then bombed the internment camps. Yeah, you could point, if that happened, you could point to that and say, see, we did it too, so, and we don't have anything to, I mean, the number of things that are wrong about this is really, it's just like dizzying almost. What even is the argument that he's making? So I guess we don't have any place to talk. America has no moral superiority to any other country. So why do we care about Russia killing Ukrainian civilians? Would we be up in arms about that? You could make the same argument. You're saying, well, yeah, but look at what America's done. So who are we to tell Russia not to kill Ukrainian civilians? Who are we to tell China not to bomb Taiwan to smithereens and take it over? Who are we to stand up against any wrongdoing around the world? We're the worst ones, after all. So you now have General Mark Milley making one of the most un-American arguments you can make. By applying modern morality in a world that has been, for all intents and purposes, at peace since 1945. Like, why were 69 Japanese cities destroyed? Which they were, and it was horrible. And so you're already, I'm already reeling from this idea that the head of the American military is sitting there going, we don't have any position to talk. We're worse than anybody. Who are we to say other countries can't kill civilians? So that's just completely insane on the face of it. And completely separates the death toll of civilians from the reality of the situation in 1944 or 1943. Compared to today, in the comparison between our enemies in World War II, the Japanese, who were running like rape camps in China and just massacres beyond description and just Yeah, it's just absolutely horrifying stuff that we put an end to. A little bit different than a population in an open-air prison camp being bombed relentlessly by their much more significantly powerful. I mean, it's just, it's so insane. And so while you're reeling from Mark Milley basically abandoning any moral superiority that Americans could have on the world stage willfully, which, I mean, the only appropriate way to think about this, I mean, this stuff's in the past, it can't be changed. And the only appropriate thing to do at this point is, as Americans, stand up for Americans in the past and say, you might not have liked it, but you shouldn't have started the fight. And America did what it had to create a safer, more free world. And it was tragic that those civilians died. But you can't blame America for getting in, you know, years on after a sneak attack by the Japanese. And I know it was all fraudulent. And that's sort of another point to all of this, right? The fact that we were against that stuff also when it comes to Iraq and the huge number of civilians we killed there, the 500,000 children we starved to death that Madeleine Albright didn't even blink twice about, which again had just no purpose whatsoever in terms of American security. While you're still just trying to wrap your mind around what Mark Milley is saying, this other guy, and I don't even know who this other guy is, he quite literally is making the argument that war is peace. I mean, this is as Orwellian as it gets. He says the peace protesters who are demanding a ceasefire and demanding that America stop arming and protecting the genocidal maniacs in Israel, they're actually the war protest. They're actually pro-war because they're against the bombing of civilians. Because they're concerned about the bombing of civilians by the tens or perhaps hundreds of thousands. Was that Alex Karp? So we knew who Alex Karp is, right?
He's the CEO of Palantir.
He's the CEO of Palantir, who bragged about single-handedly stopping the rise of the far right in Europe. These people are psychopaths. I mean, that's really the takeaway here. These people are insane. So this was Alex Karp at Davos saying, yes, their program Gotham, Palantir's Gotham program, single-handedly stopped the rise of the far right in Europe. Single-handedly manipulated and undermined a political movement for an entire continent. Because they're the good guys, after all. And if you want to protest against a war, that means you're actually on the enemy's side and are therefore a pro-war protester. And these are the people with the AI programs that are subtly dictating the political persuasion of entire continents. He calls the anti-war protesters an infection in our society. So here's a guy who's got algorithmic control to the level that he brags, and you know, maybe he's lying, but I don't think he is, that he can manipulate an entire continent and destroy a political revival in its nascent stage. And he considers people that are against Israel an infection that has to be cured. And apparently America has no moral standing to say anything about what anybody else does because we've gone to war in the past. Talk about an infection. Talk about an infection. These guys are an infection. Alex Karp, Mark Milley, they represent cancerous cells in the body of our nation. And unfortunately, they're cancerous cells with the tools to spread. Cancer of the brain. They're brain cancer. I gotta be honest, that's one of those terrifying videos I've ever seen. You've got the head of the American Army and the head of Palantir calling you an infection. All right, welcome back, folks. We're gonna keep talking about Israel a little bit. We're gonna open up the phone lines for your calls, however. There's a lot more going on in the world, but there's sort of a divergence in America's consciousness right now, I think. And as we just saw with Alex Karp and General Milley basically saying war is peace, and that if you stand up against the indiscriminate bombing of civilians, you're basically on the side of the terrorists. But of course, you know, they're not the only ones just going full bore on this. And again, we go to Piers Morgan here. Clip number three, Abby Martin is being grilled by this guy named Musab Hassan. And this Hassan guy, I mean, it's ahistorical what he's saying. It's nonsensical. It is literally genocidal. He's making the case that Palestine doesn't exist. So I guess the Palestinians don't exist. So I guess you're not killing anybody when you destroy Palestinians. Just truly bizarre. So this is one of the divergences, is the insane terroristic genocidal rhetoric being deployed, and then the countervailing response to that, which is that more and more Americans are openly speaking up against the despotic and secretive control that America is operating under. But let's go now to clip number three.
Abby does not have the authority. She's just a self-appointed low-grade journalist. How can you be a journalist and you call this a genocide, ethnic cleansing? And she just keep repeating ethnic cleansing, genocide, colonialism, etc. None of it is real, including Palestine. It's all in your head. None of it is existential. Palestine was never born. How can you free it? It was never there. It's just a colonial entity, and some people choose to make it into a national identity. And this parrot has been just repeating Hamas propaganda. Marwan Barghouti, that she's talking about him, she never met him. I knew Marwan before he got to power. He is a criminal. He killed five people. He has blood on his hands. He cheated on his wife. He has a secret son that he never revealed it to the public. Of course, I can criticize him, and I can criticize all the criminals that I know personally. She's been there only for a visit, and maybe she had some falafel sandwich, you know, and she really was blown away of the Palestinian experience. There is no such a thing as Palestine. It's about time to retire, find a different job. You're not a journalist. You don't qualify even to be a mother.
Wow. Abby.
Musab, you know, it's usually a public figure, if they were caught lying about half the things that they said, they would be completely discredited and never allowed airtime. You are spewing such ahistorical anti-Arab bigotry that not even the fringe of Israeli society would agree with you. I mean, not even Israeli historians agree.
I'm not anti-Arab. Sir. I am Arab. This is my ethnicity. Sir. Islam is just
anti-Muslim
a
bigotry.
I am not a Muslim.
Musab.
We are Arabs.
Musab. Okay, then anti-Muslim bigotry, which is frankly appalling considering that there's a billion people on the planet who would be characterized as you as, you know, extremists who need to be used force against, according to you. But Musab, not even Israeli historians would agree with the fact that you claim that there's no military occupation in the West Bank, that there's no apartheid state. Israelis at least admit, yes, those things exist, but here's why they're necessary and justified. They don't even agree with you. You're so fringe that I don't even know where you're coming from. I mean, so again, if we can't even agree with the basic facts of the conflict and the reality in front of our eyes, I don't know how we can really even discuss this.
All right, let's pause it there, and we're going to come back to that clip. on the other side. You don't even qualify to be a mother. This is a former Israeli spy, by the way. We'll be right back. I know we've had our differences with Piers Morgan as an institution here at InfoWars. But credit where it's due. His program, Uncensored, throughout this conflict has had some of the most explosive interviews and debates on the topic of Israel's war against Gaza. So I want to return to this video. Just how unhinged this dude is. He says Palestine doesn't exist. He actually called Palestine a colonial project. Wrap your mind around that one. In case you're unfamiliar, Palestine has always existed. I don't know what else to tell you. It's called that since at least the Roman times, but even before then. He apparently is the son of the founder of Hamas, by the way. But he's also a Israeli spy. He's an undercover agent for Shin Bet. Yeah, his father is the co-founder of Hamas, and I guess he was Hamas and then became a turncoat and joined the Israelis. And just from what he said there, because we'll go back to the clip here in just a second, he calls Palestine a colonial entity. This is insane madness. That's wild that he would even say that. I mean, that would be like me saying the Comanches are a colonial project. It's just utterly baffling how somebody could be an extremist like this. And he talks about the murderous background, as he puts it, of some of the leaders of Hamas. Do we need to go through the history of Israel? Should we take a look at maybe who some of Israel's first prime ministers were and what they were up to before the state of Israel was established? Because they were all assassins, all of them, like terrorist assassins, like responsible for bombing the King David Hotel and killing dozens of innocent people. And then they go on to be the president of Israel. Like the people in glass houses kind of thing. But let's go back because, again, so he's just told Abby Martin that she's not even fit to be a mother. That she's not really a journalist for some reason. I mean, the extremism here on display is something to behold. And it's a constant throughout history, by the way. Well, like all of human history. They've done a good job of sort of downplaying this in the media these days. And you know, my whole stance on any of this stuff, you just treat everybody equally. And when it comes to extremism, Jews are probably at the top of the list. Out of every religion, like major worldwide religion, I think in terms of like just overall extremism or individual acts of extremism, I think Jews have got to be at the top of the list. And they don't really, you know, they don't have that reputation these days because most of the Jews in America are secular. Ostensibly. But I mean, this goes back to pre-Roman times. The Greeks, constantly, these constant refrains of like, man, we tried to do some minor change and the Jews in Alexandria burnt the whole city down. I mean, it's the extremist element in Judaism is extremely strong. And again, we point it out when it's Islam, so we should point it out, or Christianity. Christianity has its extremist, Islam has its extremists, and Judaism has its extremists. And this is one of them here, obviously, this Mossab guy. So let's go back. This is, again, Abby Martin being told that, Palestine doesn't exist by a Palestinian. Very bizarre, bizarre things going on here. Let's go back to this clip.
Well, I think it's belittling her credentials. Listen, everyone's entitled to an opinion.
Best case scenario, if there is an occupation, it's between Israel and Jordan, or it's between Israel and Egypt. Because it was not an occupation of a country called Palestine. There was never Palestine in history. This is not an absurd statement. It's reality. Palestine never exists. It was not a country. It was not a nation. It's not an ethnic group. We are Arabs. We are the Arabs of Judea and Samaria. And when I was born, like millions of Palestinians, we had Jordanian birth certificate. The people of Gaza were Egyptian with Egyptian birth certificate. There was no Palestine. Yasser Arafat created this entity, and everybody believed him. And this lie must die. This is why I don't like what Abby and her likes doing by trying to delegitimize Israel. She's trying to discredit me. Who gave you the authority? How dare you?
You are a spy. You're a spy for Israeli intelligence, Mossab.
It is not funny. It's not funny. Your tale,
it's
your
not
false
funny at
narrative
all.
Need to
it's,
stop because you are creating chaos.
Mossab.
Listen, Abby, you are bringing
Mossab,
chaos to the United States and you will be held accountable. You are just a criminal like them.
Sure. Okay, Mossab, you can't be taken seriously and you're not legitimate because you are literally, you have worked for Israeli intelligence to out your own people. But listen,
you
can't discredit my reality as well. You can't discredit my reality as well. I was in the West Bank. I had assault rifles pointed at my head from a 17-year-old American from Palo Alto. That's an occupation.
You are in my domain right now.
That's a military occupation.
Okay, you are in my domain. When you come to my domain, you have to pay respect. You have to respect all the effort that I put to save human lives, and you cannot reduce that into some propaganda because
why
it's
on
not,
earth would I respect
it's not about
you for
Israel,
putting
it's
the
about...
leader of Fatah, Mossab? You put the most unifying popular Palestinian figure, you are credited to putting him in prison. This is someone who would win an election against Hamas. He is a peace activist. He was fighting for a two-state solution. This isn't about Hamas, and you know it. This is about you shutting down, tamping down on all factions of Palestinian society. And let's be clear, what is Palestine supposed to do? What are Palestinians supposed to do when in 2018, thousands of Palestinians in Gaza marched peacefully to this fortified perimeter fence that Israeli snipers have authorized themselves to shoot to kill, and that's exactly what they did. They massacred over 200 peaceful demonstrators, medics, press, journalists, clearly marked press, disabled people in wheelchairs, and children. These are all violations of international law in the Geneva Convention. Israeli snipers perched up behind sand dunes picked people off one by one in a methodical slaughter over the course of several months. That's when Palestinians tried to peacefully protest. So I think the question should be, what should Palestinians do? Because they're not even allowed to advocate for their legal rights. They're not even allowed to raise up a Palestinian flag. I visited a place called Sebastia in the occupied West Bank, and Palestinians were shot and in the hospital for simply erecting a Palestinian flag on a hilltop several days prior. This is the brutal reality of military occupation in the West Bank, Mossab. I mean, I want the violence to end. I empathize with the victims of both sides of this.
Do you?
And that's why I want to get to the root of the conflict. Yes, I don't go out there and say Jews can't be trusted like you say about Muslims. I empathize with all civilian life. I believe
then
and cherish the sanctity of human life. And that's why I want to get to the root of why violence occurs, Mossab.
Let me ask
Mossab
a question.
Well done, Abby Martin. Well done, indeed. I mean, maybe we need to do a history lesson about Palestine. I mean, the question is, if Palestine never existed, where did the Palestinians come from? I mean, this makes no sense. This is my domain. I just... Chutzpah, I guess. I guess that's just what it is. Son of Hamas leader breaks silence on decision to denounce terror group. They don't care about Palestinians. Hilarious, right? They don't care about Palestinians, but I don't think they exist. What? So they don't care about Palestinians, but you don't even think they are a group. You don't even think they exist. Jordan, when was Jordan created? That's a question. I mean, what do you even say to this? He says Palestine was a colonial entity. He says there's no such thing as Palestine in history, despite the fact that the name itself was a Roman term given to this province. I mean, even when you read the Bible, they don't even use the word Israel. Israel refers to the people, the Jewish people in Judea. Judea was what they called the land. And again, this is the crazy thing. And Abby Martin pointed out a little bit where she's like, everybody knows that Israel has an apartheid system. Everybody knows that the West Bank is under military occupation. So why are you lying about it? You can justify it. You can say, you know, this is why it's necessary that it's under military occupation. But to deny even a military occupation, this is crazy. This is insanity. Or to claim that Palestine is a colonial project. I mean, everybody knows that Israel is a colonial project. It was founded in 1948. It was a colony. It was the mandate system from the British. It founded a Jewish state until the first prime ministers of Israel got what they wanted, and then they bombed the people who'd helped them. Yeah, none of this exists, by the way. All this footage that you're seeing, this doesn't exist. None of this was real. None of these people exist. None of them are not Palestinians living on the land that would become Israel. It was empty. It was just an empty land. All these people, they're imaginary. Crazy. It is really crazy, I gotta say. I mean, he literally says there's no such thing as Palestinians. He says we're Arabs of Judea. Now, Judea doesn't exist. That's one thing that has not existed for the last 2,000 years. It ain't going well for them. I'm just saying. These arguments, I hope they're not landing with anybody because they're just all lies. And you know, kind of the craziest part of it is when Abby Martin's like, yeah, I sympathize with people on both sides. He's like, do you? Do you really? In other words, like, so you support Israel? So you sympathize with the Israelis that are being attacked too? And it's like, what is this double standard? You just said that Palestine doesn't exist. But you demand that Palestinians have sympathy for Israel. Are the people who support Palestine also support Israel? Became an Israeli spy, says his father and his army want to annihilate the Jewish people and create a global Islamic state. Truly wild. Now again, the way that this conflict has gone, they very conveniently leave out all of Israel's actions, not even just after October 7th, but before October 7th. To them, it's all about October 7th. And it seems crazy if all the information you had was that Israel's attacked on October 7th, and now there's a much higher degree of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism around the world. That would be crazy if that was the case. But you're leaving out the, at this point, 7-month-long campaign against Gaza. And what actually happened on October 7th, which was that the Israeli army killed the majority of the people who died that day at the Hannibal Directive. that rained death down on the people that they were ostensibly trying to save. That's not speculation. That's the eyewitness testimony of the Israelis that were there and the data that has come out from it since. So the baffling part about this is that they're just lying about everything and leaving out gigantic chunks that are very relevant to the story. The good news about it is that intelligent, forthright, thoughtful people are not falling for it. And that doesn't just include people that are constantly looking into these things, like myself. I don't know about Theo Von, but he's a comedian. And he seems to be getting what's going on here. Clip number 30, Theo Von making a little joke about who controls America. Let's go to clip number 30 now.
We found out there's a new restaurant that had opened that was run by the Israeli mob.
Oh, yeah.
And it was called Joey's. And
called America.
It was about one of their guys that...
It's called America. What's the name of that thing the Israeli mob founded? America? Is that called America again? And I've used this language before to try to describe what I think is the proper way of looking at all of this. And that it is like a mob. Everybody gets how the mob operates. Everybody gets that the mob has an ethnic component to it. When it's Italians, nobody has an issue with this. One of the strange things is, if you're looking into the history of the mob in America, there's many times where it'll be like, you know, you'll hear 30 minutes about the Italian mob and how it started in Sicily and how it grew after World War II and how it was transported to Ellis Island, where these old world ways of doing business were brought over and inserted and reformed to fit the American capitalistic idea. And she goes on and on about how the Italians, Italian history, and the Italians in New York, da, da. And then it's like, and the primary organizer and the founder of the American mob was Arnold Rothstein. Well, wait a second. We've been talking about Italians this whole time. His name's Arnold Rothstein? Does it sound very Italian? Doesn't have a vowel on the end of his name. I mean, the difference is that if you talk about the Italian mob, the Italians don't think that you're talking about them. Because they think, well, I'm not in the mob. That's not me. If you talk about the Israeli or the Jewish mob being a secretive organization engaged in criminal activity, controlling politicians, manipulating the outcome of elections, dealing on the black market. And these things are still going on in a very real way. It's just not the Italians doing it. And when it comes to October 7th and the way this is being portrayed and talked about in the media, we have this from Jewish Insider. House bill asks U.S. Holocaust Museum to develop a curriculum on the October 7th attack. Representatives Josh Gottemer and Michelle Steele are set to introduce a bill today directing the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum to create a curriculum to teach about the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. The USHMM, I guess that's the U.S. Holocaust Museum, already produces Holocaust education material for use by schools across the country. The October 7th curriculum would be targeted towards secondary schools. The bill requests the new curriculum include information on the October 7th attack, how the history of anti-Semitism contributed to the attack, the spread of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel rhetoric on campuses, the spread of anti-Israel rhetoric on social media, and denial and distortion as a form of anti-Semitism in the wake of such attacks. Now, this bill defines anti-Semitism based on the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism. That's one that we've been talking about forever, that basically just criminalizes all, you know, demonizes and calls anti-Semitism any criticism of any Jew ever over anything they do or as a group, as an individual, whether it's a crime or imaginary or real. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So this is the definition they're working on. It also asked the Department of Education to report to the Congress on the curriculum. They say Hamas's barbaric October 7th terrorist attack on Israel and the resulting tsunami of anti-Semitic incidents have transformed Jewish lives around the world. Like this sentence alone, this was Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL. Sort of tells you everything you need to know. Hamas's barbaric October 7th terrorist attack on Israel and the resulting tsunami of anti-Semitic incidents. This is crazy. This is like after World War II, saying Japan's sneak attack on Pearl Harbor and the resulting anti-American sentiment in Japan. It's like, did you forget about the nuclear bombs? Like that does have something to do with it, right? It's not because of the Pearl Harbor attack that the Japanese people that we didn't manage to vaporize might not think of us so kindly. It just really is bizarre. The tsunami of anti-Semitic incidents have to do with that working definition of anti-Semitism, meaning that anybody saying, hey, Israel sure is killing a bunch of civilians right now, that would be considered an anti-Semitic incident. And it's basically entirely because of the actions of Israel following October 7th. Nobody saw what happened on October 7th and said, okay, now I hate Jews more. I mean, this mission makes no sense. This is just utterly nonsensical, completely, and insane. I'll move on from this, and I'll open up the phone lines. And I really just wonder, I mean, obviously you've got people like making jokes about this and talking about this stuff more openly now. Is the average American falling for this? I mean, are they really think that October 7th happened and then anti-Semitism rose? We're going to take your phone calls for the remainder of the show. So some other stories to cover and videos to show you, but we'll open up the phone lines. In the meantime, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now here on American Journal, and we'll be taking your calls quickly so we won't be on hold too long. But yeah, give us a call, 1-877-789-2539. Some strange stories to cover here. I mean, just all this stuff is baffling, just baffling madness. Pfizer stock hit after boy dies of cardiac arrest during gene therapy trial. Stock in Pfizer dropped on Tuesday after a young boy receiving experimental drug therapy for Duchenne something muscular dystrophy died during the trial. According to Stat News, Pfizer has confirmed that the boy suffered cardiac arrest and is pausing crossing over patients in its randomized phase 3 trial of the treatment in older boys. According to the report, the company will for now stop dosing patients who initially received a placebo with the gene therapy after a year. Pfizer is expected to announce data from the study in upcoming weeks. Which is good to know that at least some medical testing gets stopped when the people subjected to it are dying. Not so much the case when it came to the COVID vaccines. After all, Pfizer and AstraZeneca knew that their vaccines were killing people and yet allowed them to continue to be sold. Of course, they're taking big hits now. You know, Pfizer's income is down over $1 billion since people are not interested in taking a vaccine that's not a vaccine for a disease that is not dangerous. So there's that. We just keep being in this situation where it's like, how much do we need? How much information do we need before people have the correct reaction to this? I mean, my God. It just goes on and on. You know, Israel's a good example. Of the fact that, you know, during World War II, nobody knew about death camps. Nobody knew about, you know, mass slaughterings. I mean, there's some talk here or there, but nobody was really aware of the full scale and scope of the Nazi activities until after the war. And then following then the revelation of what was done is, of course, basically set the stage for geopolitics the world over for the next 70 years. But we're watching this unfold in real time. And it really is, I mean, it almost is disheartening for me just how much human beings, in particular Americans, have to be told how to think. Like they really have to be programmed to think a certain way. They just can't come to their own conclusions. It's so strange. It really is strange. And I guess there's just, I don't know, man. I mean, I just don't know what to say. You can show people video of what's happening and they just don't care. It just doesn't bother them. Doesn't outrage them. You can show them like a Hollywood movie about stuff that didn't happen 80 years ago, and they're like weeping, and they're just like, you know. Like, can you not just see what's happening in the world around you? Can you not just come to your own conclusions? Is this really that difficult? That's all it takes. Let's go out to calls since we're getting some calls about this topic in particular. Let's go to James in is that California? Talking about October 7th on line one. Go ahead, James, you're on the air.
Yo. Yeah, you know, we got to remember that Hamas before October 7th in no way would have been able to attack in this way. You know, in no way is Israel in any threat from them being attacked, okay? Israel has, you know, the billion-dollar American military tech. They don't. Hamas doesn't have tanks. They don't have Black Hawks. They have none of that. Okay. Israel's official statement is that it was an intelligence failure. I mean, what a joke, dude. That is a lie, and we know it. It all. Okay. If their whole argument is justified by October 7th, then it being a stand down means that everything they're doing is completely wrong. I mean, don't you think? Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And again, this isn't even speculation. As you point out, their official story is that's intelligence failure. They are both in Israel simultaneously investigating how the failure on October 7th happened and passing laws saying you're not allowed to question October 7th. I don't get how that works exactly, but you don't pass laws against questioning things that are on the up and up that are true. I mean, this is nonsense. This is total nonsense. They stood down, they allowed the attack to happen, and then they moved the music festival to the position where it was in the line of fire, and then they, you know, withheld response for 7 to 9 hours, something like that. And when they did respond, they employed the Hannibal directive, which means you just go all out to kill the invaders, regardless of who you catch in the crossfire, which means that probably the majority of Israelis killed on October 7th were killed by Israel. I mean, that's the official story. And you look at the cars that are burnt out. Those were attacked by helicopters. Those were not – that was – Hamas did not even have the capability to do the damage that you see on display. And the personal eyewitness of the people who were hostages of Hamas said, yeah, we were there with the Hamas people in the kibbutz until the Israeli army showed up and killed us all. You know, one or two people survived to tell the story. No, you're exactly right. It's absurd. It is all absurd.
Yeah, imagine being the Israelis escaping. They're like, oh, look, it's the IDF and they're Blackhawks. Oh, wait, and just getting mowed down.
Seriously? Like, brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, the IDF, it's the most well-defended border ever. I mean, they can track a pigeon flying over that thing. There's no way Hamas could have ever waged an attack and it not being immediately shut down. Okay? It's dumb, and I don't know. They need to be held accountable. I don't know. This is nuts, dude. I blank sometimes. But, yeah, dude, that's pretty much all I got to say about that.
No, I appreciate it. I completely agree. No, you make a very cogent point that if everything that's happening right now is predicated on October 7th and October 7th was allowed to happen, this is nonsense. This is total nonsense. I'm just thinking of, the barroom metaphor for this, which would just be, you see somebody carrying a bunch of drinks, you run into them, so they spill it on you, and then you hit them in the face and go, yeah, but he spilled drinks all over me. It's like, yeah, but you... Anyway, the response is not justified by the attack. It wouldn't be justified by the attack, even if the attack was completely legitimate. And I think parts of it were. I think there was some form of intelligence failure. I think they underestimated their opponents, as we've seen them do in the ensuing 7 months, constantly sort of underplaying the resistance they would face. The whole thing is predicated on lies. Let's go quickly to Sean in California. We'll hold you over since we got to go to break here in a second. But go ahead, Sean. What's your take on the Israel conflict?
Well, Harrison, you and the last caller kind of mirrored my sentiments. This is like that meme with the two German kids that are Nazis and one's asking the other, are we the bad guys? When you ban journalism regarding October 7th, that immediately is the biggest red flag you can have. And if we look at it in end times prophecy of the accelerationists, they want the whole world to turn on Israel. Well, they're doing a pretty darn good job of it.
It's a very good point as well. I mean, and we've heard people call into this show and say, yeah, they're going to have to bomb Damascus. Go back out to your phone calls again. Sean in California, I think you made a good point there. I'm not sure if you have anything to add, but I told you I'd hold you over. Anything else to add, Sean, before we move on to other callers?
Well, Harrison, again, I'll be rapid fire about this. Yesterday, you put out a tweet, and this is something people on X can go and see. You made a very distinct point. How many outlets are actually covering Israel's war crimes? Last I checked, it's mainly InfoWars that's doing, down the middle analysis of pros and cons, and you'll see most of the other alternative outlets or conservative outlets aren't touching it. They're all trying to be buddy-buddy with Israel, which last point, real quick, it's also biblical end times where people say part of the new world order will be that the Muslims and Christianity would be combined into Chrislam. Well, again, I've seen Palestinian protesters now trying to appeal to Christians that, hey, we're more, Islam's more like Christianity than Judaism is, so we should team up. Which would serve, again, that new world order when Christians and Muslims are all buddy-buddy and form that hybrid religion to hunt down the actual Christians who don't conform to that sheep-like mentality.
Mm.
So they're playing a pretty good game on it, and your reporting, dude, is helping expose it. So, stay hard and keep doing it.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. And, it's not even like we're anti-Israel in the first place, but we're anti-lies. We're anti-war. Randy, all the things that Israel does. I don't hate the Israeli people. I understand that, there's a huge number of them that are protesting against what the government's doing. Seems like every week or so there's some new video of it's either the Orthodox Jews just being absolutely brutalized by the Zionist regime, or it's just the more lefty liberal Israelis protesting outside of the Knesset. I don't hate the Israeli people. I have nothing against the Israeli people. Yeah, but it's the problem. And it's like a tweet I put out a couple months ago. It's like I keep being called anti-Semitic because Jews are doing evil crap. I just got to call it out. I don't care who does it. I'll call it out. I don't give Jews a pass, just like I don't subject them to extra scrutiny. So I'll just call out the evil things being done. And people point to it and go, you're talking about the Jews. And it's like, I'm talking about the evil people. So I don't care who they are. This is the tweet that Sean is referring to from Michael Tracy. The number of right-wing media outlets that are systematically, fanatically pro-Israel is actually astonishing. He goes on to list basically every right-wing outlet. And I like most of these outlets, but he's right. They are fanatically pro-Israel. And that's what sets us apart, is we're just simply not fanatically pro-Israel. We're also not fanatically anti-Israel. We're just fanatically anti-war and pro-America, pro-innocent people. I mean, the list is extensive, right? Fox News, Daily Wire, Newsmax, Postmillennial, PragerU, Breitbart, Washington Free Beacon, Rebel News, Epoch Times, Babylon Bee, New York Post, National Review, WorldNet Daily. It goes on and on and on and on and on. The one outlet missing from that list is InfoWars. We are the outlier. We are truly independent. And as InfoWars writer Jamie White noted on this, he was the top comment for a while. I guess not anymore, but he retweeted as well. Yeah, Jamie White. Meanwhile, InfoWars is fanatically pro-America. That's it. That's all it takes. Just being pro-America, pro-truth, pro-reality, pro-peace. These things get you called all sorts of names. And listen, there's a reason, right? There's a reason why all these outlets are so fanatically pro-Israel. You know, and what InfoWars does, we just report the facts. I mean, the shows have our opinions, and obviously there's, you know, some of that in the articles too, but you'll see on InfoWars, you'll see, you know, Israel does that, you know, Israel starts bombing Rafah refugee camp. And then you'll see, you know, another story about the Biden regime giving billions of dollars to Hamas. It's just like, here's what's happening. This is just what's going on right now. When you go to these other outlets, what you see is the negative stories about Israel just don't appear on their platforms. They just turn a blind eye to the bad things that Israel's doing. And then they couch everything else in the Israeli perspective. So we'll report, you know, this protest is being shut down. But then you go to another outlet and it's reporting the same story, but it's like Hamas supporting terrorist sympathizers cleared out by patriotic pro-Israel heroes. And you'll just notice it more and more if you actually start to look for it. But this really does make us the outlier, and you know the reason why. It's pretty simple. We only have one group of people to answer to, and that's everybody hearing my voice right now. It's everybody that goes to InfoWars.com. It's everybody that tunes into Band.video. It's everybody that shares our clips or follows us on Twitter. Our audience goes to InfoWars Store, keeps us on air. As long as that keeps happening, we get to say whatever the hell we want about whoever the hell we want. And I know and I appreciate your support for the exact reason that we aren't hateful, that we don't blame entire groups of people, that we don't demonize all Jews for the actions of a few, or even all Muslims for the actions of a few. We understand the problem-reaction-solution paradigm, the divide-and-conquer paradigm. We understand this. We try our best not to fall into it by joining one side or the other, but staying above it and just showing the playbook of how this unfolds, taking that 30,000-foot view. So we so appreciate your support at InfoWarsStore.com. We could not be as free and, dare I say, even-handed as we are without your support. Keep supporting us at InfoWarsStore.com. We'll keep being here to tell you the truth about what's going on. Or you can let them destroy us, and then all you'll be left with is one voice from a variety of different outlets. We are the outlier, just like we were as conservatives in the Iraq War time period, just like we were when everything shifted and suddenly Obama was in charge and everybody who'd previously been so anti-war suddenly went quiet and let the drones take over without a peep. We just have principles. We stick to those. We pound those. We drive those home as often as possible. And that leaves us on the outside of any categorization. Just the truth. Just the truth. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Let's go out to another call now. Bernard in North Carolina wants to talk about this conversation about Israel and Gaza. Go ahead, Bernard. You're on the air.
Hey, well, I was listening a little while ago, I don't know, half an hour maybe. You made a statement saying that the Bible speaks of Israel not having to do with the land, and I think you might need to do a little more study. The word Israel actually is a combination. There's three different meanings biblically. One of them is the name change from Abraham to Israel, which actually also means, well, from him wrestling with God. A little out of breath. The second meaning does have to do with the land. If you study your Bible, you will find out. And the other meaning is also the people. In fact, the people is the one you've come across most of the time. And as we understand as Christians, I'm a Christian, a Sabbath-keeping Christian, actually, and I understand that as Christians, we are spiritual Israel. So there are some points of confusion that I think I would just challenge you to go ahead and just to do a little more seeking and studying. But here's my main question, and this is what I don't understand. I'm totally in agreement of the possibility of factions within the Israeli government, the Zionists, you know, every country has a swamp, right? We're not the only one. That right. They could have set up this 9/11 style October 7th thing, and I get that. That could have happened. You know, but here's the thing that I think is beyond just October 7th. I think the problem is, and people aren't talking about it enough, in my opinion, they're not talking about the jihad of the devout Muslim. A devout Muslim to Islam is going to wage jihad. I'm not saying all Muslims are devout, but that's the simple fact of the matter. And this has been going on for thousands of years, quite frankly. This is an ongoing thing. And why aren't people talking about this? Because, I've been a fan and a supporter of InfoWars and the InfoWars store. My wife has bought lots of stuff. I mean, I've been listening to Alan Jones since he broke into the Bohemian Grove. So I'm a big fan. Don't get me wrong here. But if you're going to look at natural rights principles, which is what I focus on, we have to understand that there is a satanic force in play here that goes beyond just the government, right? And that demonic force wants destruction to happen. Like you say, division and all this other stuff. There is a jihad, and unless we talk about this, when people are screaming at the, quote, Jews saying, you know, from the West Bank to the sea and all this stuff, they want total extermination. Here's what the Americans don't understand.
Yeah, I got you. Sorry, we're coming to a break here, but I think if you look back at Israel's past, you'll see a lot of arguments against jihad, too.